Next are excerpts from talks given on a Radhakund Parikram on December 17, 1991 in Vrindavan.
Therefore, these are very important because we were just talking in the car how much time Prabhupada had to spend on basic instructions that there is God, things the universe hasn't happened by chance, and he had to repeat this. So he didn't dwell a great deal on Radhakund. But these texts are quite important. Text 8. Tannama Rupa Charitari Sukirtananu. The essence of all advice is that one should utilize one's full time, 24 hours a day, in nicely chanting and remembering the Lord's divine name, transcendental form, qualities, and eternal pastimes, thereby gradually engaging one's tongue and mind. In this way, one should reside in Braja and serve Krishna under the guidance of devotees. One should follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. This doesn't mention Radhakund specifically, but this verse contains the ingredients for Raganuga Bhakti, which is the way that Radhakund is actually understood. As in any place in Vrindavan, there's the external and there's the internal, and the external is the different, which we may take in the form of different bodily distractions that occur to us when we come to the Dham, mental distractions. They're really our externals that we bring to the Dham. and so we may not understand what is the meaning of such a mysterious place. We have to be very, very advanced to actually enter Vrindavan and Radhakund. But just by coming here, we get the benefit. But we can't expect to enter the inner meaning. However, the approach to the inner meaning is in this text 8. So, the essence is called Nectar of Instruction. Now he starts to sum up and he says, the essence of all the advice I could give is in these things. First of all, you should always chant Hare Krishna mantra and remember not only the name of Krishna, but his pastimes, his qualities and forms. And do this gradually, build up to it more and more in your life. Try to minimize other duties and engagements and more chant and hear about Krishna, engaging your tongue and your mind. It's interesting that the word tongue is used, rasana, tongue. There's a controversy about here at Radhakund, the Babaji's, they don't chant with their tongue. We Saraswati devotees, Prabhupada's Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and Prabhupada, we chant with our tongue, and here it says rasana, manasi. With your tongue and with your mind. So, not just that we're proud, oh, we chant with our tongue, but you have to, but we chant with our tongue because we can't chant with our mind by itself. But by chanting with the tongue, we can control the mind. Then, he says, Tishtan Vraje, you should live in Vrindavan. So, some of us, we're not so fortunate, or we have other duties. We don't live in Vrindavan all the time. But Rupa Goswami says, no, then you should live in Vrindavan in your mind all the time. If you want to follow the essence of advice, you must live in Vrindavan. So this has to be taken up. If you don't follow this, if you don't try to bring the mind to always thinking and hearing about Krishna, then Prabhupada spells out in the purport that at the time of death, then your mind will take you to whatever you're thinking of, and you'll have to have another body, not in the spiritual world, not in Braja. So it's not a luxury or an esoteric instruction to always think of Krishna, because he says, if the mind suddenly thinks of something not very congenial, one has to take a corresponding birth in the next life. On the other hand, if one can think of Krishna at the time of death, he can be transferred to the spiritual world. And then, these things, tongue and mind, fixed on Krishna, live in Vrindavan. And his other point in the essence of instructions is tad anuragi jananugami, which is to serve under the guidance of devotees and follow in the footsteps of the Lord's beloved devotees who are deeply attached to his devotional service. So this begins with the spiritual master, with the Vaishnavas, and ultimately by practicing we come to understand our particular attraction by rasa to a liberated devotee, ragatmika devotee, one of the associates of Radha or Krishna. And this can be done in any of the rasas. As Prabhupada ends his purport, he says, this is called Raganuga Bhakti, spontaneous devotional service. It can be executed in the Shanta Rasa, when one aspires to be like Krishna's cows, or the stick or flute in the hand of Krishna, or the flowers around Krishna's neck. In the Dasya Rasa, one follows in the footsteps of servants like Chitraka, Patraka, or Raktaka. In the friendly Sakya Rasa, one can become a friend like Baladev, Sridham, or Sudham. In the Vatsalya Rasa, one can become like Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda. And in Madhurya Rasa, characterized by conjugal love, one can become like Srimati Radharani or her lady friends, such as Lalita and her serving maids, Manjaris, like Rupa and Rati. This is the essence of all instruction in the matter of devotional service. So, the Manjaris mentioned here, Rupa Manjari, the form of Rupa Manjari in this world is who? Rupa Goswami. And who is Rati Manjari? Raghunath. And so this is Raghunath Goswami's place of bhajan. So he would come here and he would either be talking about Lord Chaitanya, as we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he would speak 3 hours a day about Lord Chaitanya and his eyes would be full of tears. Or he would merge in his identity of Rati Manjari and think of serving Radha and Krishna, because this pond is a place where Radha and Krishna would have their most intimate pastimes in the middle of the day. So he would think of those pastimes. All right, so let's move on some more, then we'll stop some more. The story of how Radhakund was created from any resident of Vrindavan. But it's nice that we have an authoritative version of this in the Bhagavatam. So I'll read it. It occurs in the chapter 36 of the 10th canto, the slaying of Arista, the bull demon. After Arista had been killed by Krishna, who acts wonderfully, Narada Muni went to speak to King Kamsa. So that's the verse. And then in the purport, from the Puranas, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti has quoted 20 verses describing a joking conversation between Radha and Krishna that took place after Krishna had killed the demon Arista. This conversation, so kindly quoted by the Acharya, describes the origin of Radhakund and Shyamakund, Radha's and Krishna's bathing ponds. The verses are as follows. The innocent young gopis said, "Ah, Krishna, don't touch us now, O killer of a bull. Alas, even though Arista was a terrible demon, still he was a male cow, so you will have to undergo atonement, just as Lord Indra did after killing Vritasura. But how can you purify yourself without going to the trouble of visiting every single holy place in the three worlds?" Krishna replied, "Why should I have to wander throughout the entire universe? I will at once bring all the countless pilgrimage places here and take my bath in them. Just watch." With this, Lord Mukunda struck his heel on the ground. Then he said, "This is the water of the Bhogavati River coming from the Patala region. And now, O holy places, all of you please come here." When the Supreme Lord had spoken these words, all the holy places went there and appeared before him. Krishna then addressed the gopis as follows. See all the holy places? But the gopis replied, we don't see them, as you describe. Then those best of holy places, joining their palms in supplication, spoke up. I am the salt ocean. I am the ocean of milk. I am the Amara Dirghika. I am the river Shona. I am the Sindhu. I am the Tamraparni. I am the holy place, Pushkar. I am the river Sarasvati. And we are the Godavari, Yamuna, and Reva rivers, and the confluence of rivers at Prayag. Just see our waters. After purifying himself by bathing, Lord Hari became quite arrogant and said, I have produced a pond containing all the various holy places, whereas you gopis must never have executed any religious duties on this earth for the pleasure of Lord Brahma. Then Srimati Radharani addressed her girlfriends as follows. I must create an even more beautiful pond, so go to work. Having heard these words, the gopis saw that Arastasura's hooves had dug a shallow ditch just west of Sri Krishna's pond. At that nearby spot, all the gopis began digging up lumps of soft mud with their hands, and in this way a divine pond manifested in the short span of an hour. Krishna was astonished to see the lake they produced. He said, go ahead, lotus-eyed one. You and your companions should fill this pond with water from mine. But Radha replied, no, 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 this is impossible, since the water of your pond is contaminated by your terrible sin of killing a cow. I will have my countless gopi companions bring the pure water of the Manasa Ganga here in billions of pots. In this way, I will fill this lake with my own water and thus make it known, unequaled in the entire world. Lord Krishna then gestured to a heavenly personality who was an intimate associate of all the holy places. Suddenly that person rose up out of Krishna's pond and bowed down to the daughter of Sri Vrishabhanu. Then with palms joined and tears pouring from his eyes, he began praying to her in devotion. O goddess, even Lord Brahma himself, the knower of all scriptures, cannot understand your glories, nor can Lord Shiva or Lakshmi. Only Krishna, the supreme goal of all human endeavor, can understand them, and thus he feels obliged to personally make sure that you can wash away your perspiration when you are fatigued. It goes on, so I'll pause and read the rest of them at the next spot. So a heavenly personality came out of the holy places, the representative of the holy places, and he began to pray to Srimati Radharani, praising her. Hearing this prayer spoken by the representative of the full assembly of holy places, Sri Radha was pleased and said, so kindly tell me your desire. They then told her plainly, our lives would be successful if we could come to your pond. That is the benediction we desire. So Lord Krishna built a pond made from the water of all the holy places. Then Radha and her associates, they built a pond which came from the Manasa Ganga. And she said her pond was better because his pond was still contaminated, so-called, by association with him and his killing the bull. So now the representative of his holy places asks Radha, can we come into your pond? Glancing at her beloved from the corner of her eyes, the daughter of Vrishabhanu replied with a smile, please come. Her gopi companions all agreed with her decision and became immersed in the ocean of happiness. Indeed, the beauty of all creatures, both mobile and stationary, was enhanced. So this is a gesture that Radharani is greater than Krishna in this pastime, and that she graciously allows him to come into her pond. So only by the grace of Radharani. Thus gaining the grace of Srimati Radharani, the holy rivers and lakes in Sri Krishna Kund forcibly broke through its boundary walls and swiftly filled Radhakund with their waters. Lord Hari then said, my dear Radha, may this pond of yours become even more world-renowned than mine. I will always come here to bathe and to enjoy my water pastimes. Indeed, this lake is as dear to me as you are. Radha replied, having a war of the external and the internal. They're shouting and I'm shouting. Radha replied, I will come to bathe in your pond as well, even though you may kill hundreds of Arista demons here. In the future, anyone who has intense devotion for this lake, which is on the spot where you chastise Aristasura, and who bathes or resides here, is sure to become very dear to me. That night, Lord Krishna initiated a rasa dance at Radhakund, generating a torrent of the greatest mood of splendorous pleasure. Sri Krishna resembled a cloud, and Srimati Radharani a brilliant flash of lightning, filling the sky with abundant beauty. In this way, their divine glories permeated the expanses of the three worlds. So that's the story of the Radhakund. But although Radha and Krishna enjoyed there when they came to this earth, the place eventually became lost to human sight. So it had to be rediscovered, and that was done by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Before we move on, I'll go on with our reading from Upadeshamrita. Text 9 begins the specific mention of Radhakund. The holy place known as Mathura is spiritually superior to Vaikuntha, the transcendental world, because the Lord appeared there. Superior to Mathurapuri is the transcendental forest of Vrindavan, because of Krishna's Rasa-lila pastimes, and superior to the forest of Vrindavan is Govardhan Hill, for it was raised by the divine hand of Sri Krishna and was the site of his various loving pastimes. And above all, the super-excellent Sri Radhakund stands supreme, for it is over-flooded with the ambrosial, nectarine prema of the Lord of Gokula, Sri Krishna. Where, then, is that intelligent person who is unwilling to serve this divine Radhakund, which is situated at the foot of Govardhan Hill? So Prabhupada tells in his purport how it was discovered by Lord Chaitanya. It was just a pond when he came here in his pastimes, a little pond where he bathed, and then it was later excavated. And especially this was recognized and developed by the six Goswamis, such as Rupa and Raghunath Das. Presently, there is a large lake known as Radhakund there. To get a little taste of the bhajan of Raghunath Das Goswami, I have one of his books, Sri Stavavali, his collection is called, of prayers. And one shorter one, it's called 10 Vows that he has taken. I'll read them. And one thing is that Raghunath Goswami introduces us to the Madhurya Lila, and that's the secret of Radhakund. Although we mentioned that all the rasas can be understood, but the rasa that he meditated on and Rupa Goswami meditated on, and that's if we actually Rupa Nuga, if we follow Rupa Goswami's internal mood, it is the Radha Krishna pastime. So the difficulty for us is that they appear like the sexual relations of man and woman in this world. So how to appreciate? First, we have to try to reduce and finally eliminate sex desire. And even before that, we have to hear these pastimes, because these pastimes can remove the material sex desire that we have, but we have to hear them in the right way. Understanding by following what Prabhupada teaches, especially in his Rasa Dance chapter of Krishna book, following what Sukadeva teaches, that Krishna's body is completely spiritual and his relationship with Radharani is completely spiritual. So even before all the traces are gone of our material desires, we should know that this Radha Krishna is not like that. This is pure spirit, and by hearing it, we should pray whenever we hear authorized presentation that I not think of this in a material way, not think of it as lusty affairs, not think of it as make-believe, but this is the topmost spiritual path. the topmost spiritual activity. So here are some of his vows. I vow I shall love my spiritual master, the Gayatri Mantra, the holy name of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's feet, Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, his associates, his elder brother, Srila Sanatana Goswami, Govardhan Hill, Radhakund, Mathura City, Vrindavan Forest, the land of Braja, the devotees of Lord Krishna, and the residents of Braja. I vow that I shall live in the land of Braja, birth after birth, chatting casually with the villagers. I shall not live even for a moment in any other place, even if the Lord resides there in his deity form, and even if the great devotees fill it with the sweet nectar of transcendental love. He doesn't want to go to Vaikuntha. Even though I suffer in long separation from the divine couple, I shall not, even for a moment, leave the land of Braja, where Sri Sri Radha Krishna eternally enjoy unparalleled transcendental pastimes. And I shall not, even if he himself invites me, go to see the opulent king of the Yadus in Dwarka. If with my own ears I heard Radha has gone to Dwarka, where Lord Hari passionately embraces her to his chest, then with an excited heart I would leave Brajapura and fly there faster than Garuda. Beginningless or with a beginning, cruel or very gentle, merciful at every moment or merciless, greater than the king of Mahavaikuntha or an ordinary human being, the son of Braja's king is my lord, birth after birth. So he doesn't care to prove whether Krishna is God or Krishna is this or that. Not for a moment shall I go near a hypocrite who worships only Lord Govinda and does not worship exalted Srimati Radharani, who is glorified by the Vedas and the great sages headed by Narada, and who is most dear to Lord Krishna. This is my vow. I shall wash the lotus feet of anyone in this world who bowed down with love, worships Lord Krishna, and the nectar person who bears the name Radha. I drink that water, and every day I carry that water on my head. Abandoned by my dear friends, unintelligent, blind, and drowning in an ocean of pain, I bite a blade of straw with my teeth and beg, "Oh, Srimati Radharani, please lead me to your lotus feet." Another feature of Raghunath Das Goswami was his severe austerities that he performed. He would drink just a tiny bit of buttermilk and would sleep very little. So he was very weak and always in his, he was either completely in his internal state or half in the internal state of Radha and Krishna. So we understand that as the background of these verses. More vows. My food, a little of Braja's milk, my home, a leaf hut, and my actions, honest austerity and scripture study. I shall live at Radhakund by the best of mountains, and I shall die at that dear lake in the company of Srila Jiva Goswami and the other devotees. So Jiva Goswami was the only one left after a while. Raghunath Goswami is especially associated with Rupa Goswami because he's Rati Manjari and Rupa is elder, or the senior Manjari, Rupa Manjari. So first he came there and he was protected by Rupa and Sanatan. But then Sanatan passed away, then Rupa passed away. So here Jiva is mentioned, and Raghunath says, "I shall die in the company of Jiva." Then Jiva protected him, as he did all the devotees. In a secluded place in Vrindavan Forest, following my dear friend Srila Rupa Goswami, in many ways I shall earnestly worship Sri Krishna, who is more splendid than many Cupids, and Srimati Radharani, whose glorious beauty defeats many goddesses of fortune. A faithful devotee who reads these 10 vows of a certain author and who fixes his mind on the transcendental forms of the dear divine couple at the proper time happily attains the realm of Braja and directly worships Sri Sri Radha Krishna. Okay, so let's try to go back and find Krishnadas Kaviraj's place. Okay. Text 10 begins by describing, out of all the jivas, so many jivas, those who are superior are called jnanis, who at least know what is the meaning of life. Most people are not jnanis, they're just interested in getting some sense gratification. They don't inquire into the meaning of life. So then he says, out of many jnanis, one may become liberated, and then he's superior. However, one who has attained prema, pure love of Krishna, is superior to him. The gopis are exalted above all the advanced devotees because they are always totally dependent upon Sri Krishna, the transcendental cowherd boy. Among the gopis, Srimati Radharani is the most dear to Krishna. Her kunda, lake, is as profoundly dear to Lord Krishna as this most beloved of the gopis. Who then will not reside at Radhakund and in the spiritual body, surcharged with ecstatic devotional feelings, a Prakriti Bhava, render loving devotional service to the divine couple, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, who perform their Astakaliya Leela, their eternal eightfold daily pastimes. Indeed, those who execute devotional service on the banks of Radhakund are the most fortunate people in the universe. So on reading this, why don't we immediately come to Radhakund and live here? One reason is, he says, that this is to be done in your spiritual body. So we have to start at the beginning of Upadeshamrita, Vacho Vegam, Manasap Krodha Vegam, learn how to control the senses, avoid the unfavorable things, practice the favorable things, exchange loving dealings with devotees in six ways, and so on. And then, as we've been reading, by regularly hearing and chanting, then we can come to this stage. But it's a very exalted stage, not just by coming to Radhakund without that qualification. Uh-oh. That's it. Now you've done it. I don't want to talk. I should ponder for that. That's all right. So he mentions how the jnanis and everybody are not as superior as the devotees of Radharani. So what the best place is to go to Radhakund. Now we're going to the last text. Text 11. Of the many objects of favored delight and of all the lovable damsels of Brajabhumi, Srimati Radharani is certainly the most... All right, let's just walk on. Then. I don't want to read. Let's walk.
He was an associate of his, and he got so much information and inspiration from him.
We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that that Raghunath Goswami wrote about Lord Chaitanya's activities because he lived with him intimately for 18 years. He was assistant servant, secretary. Secretary was Swarup Damodar, and he was Swarup Damodar's charge or servant. So he saw so many pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and he wrote about them at length. Swarup Damodar wrote about them in code. So Krishnadas Kaviraj had access to both of these things. In the Anti Leela, for example, when he's telling the inconceivable madness of Lord Chaitanya, he says, these things that Lord Chaitanya displayed, they're not even in the scriptures, and no one has ever seen them before, the way his bodily transformations occurred. So people won't believe it. But I fully believe it because I heard it from eyewitnesses. So the eyewitnesses he refers to are Raghunath Goswami in particular, who he heard from. Right here at Radhakund, he would hear from him. And then he composed the Chaitanya Charitamrita with so much of his own realization. He also is in the internal mood of Gopi Manjari. And so he could understand Lord Chaitanya's mood and message. And he was a great philosopher and a great poet. And it was so important that out of the very few books that Prabhupada had time to translate, he gave us this. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. He said that this Sanskrit here and this place here, it says that Vishwanath Chakravarti used to sit on this asana here, and his disciples, they used to sit on this place here and hear from him. So he's very, very special follower of Rupa Goswami in the Madhurya mood. And he explains all the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam in terms of Radha and Krishna. And well, the acharyas, since his time, they consider him like, all you have to do is understand his commentary of Srimad Bhagavatam and everything is perfect. In Srila Prabhupada's last days, he said that Pradyumna Das, his disciple, he said he can finish the Bhagavatam, translate the verses, and as for the purports, just translate Vishwanath Chakravarti, he said. And you can do Sanatana Goswami also, but the main thing was Vishwanath Chakravarti. His Bhagavatam Tika is the light and the way for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And that's proven by Prabhupada's own testimony. So here's his place of Bhajan Kutir, and Raghunath Goswami's Bhajan Kutir. Of course, these are new structures, but these are the places. So we can make our obeisances, and then I think we can go back.
Next are excerpts from a Vrindavan Parikram on November 27th, 1991.
Vrindavan is so beautiful, everything is offering obeisances to you. Do you know where they are?
Chapter 15?
Killing a Dhenukasura. Accompanied by the cowherd boys and Balaram, Krishna brought forward the cows and played on his flute through the forest of Vrindavan, which was full of flowers, vegetables, and pasturing grass. The Vrindavan forest was as sanctified as the clear mind of a devotee and was full of bees, flowers, and fruits. There were chirping birds and clear water lakes with waters that could relieve one of all fatigues. Sweet, flavored breezes blew always, refreshing the mind and body. Krishna, with his friends and Balaram, entered the forest and, seeing the favorable situation, enjoyed the atmosphere to the fullest extent. Krishna saw all the trees, overloaded with fruits and fresh twigs, coming down to touch the ground as if welcoming him by touching his lotus feet. He was very pleased by the behavior of the trees, fruits, and flowers, and he began to smile, realizing their desires. Krishna then spoke to his elder brother, Balaram, as follows. My dear brother, you are superior to all of us, and your lotus feet are worshipped by the demigods. Just see how these trees, full with fruits, have bent down to worship your lotus feet. It appears that they are trying to get out of the darkness of being obliged to accept the form of trees. Actually, the trees born in the land of Vrindavan are not ordinary living entities. Having held the impersonal point of view in their past lives, they are now put into this stationary condition of life. But now they have the opportunity of seeing you in Vrindavan, and they are praying for further advancement in spiritual life through your personal association. Generally, the trees are living entities in the mode of ignorance. The impersonalist philosophers are in that darkness, but they eradicate it by taking full advantage of your presence. I think the drones that are buzzing all around you must have been your devotees in their past lives. They cannot leave your company because no one can be a better, more affectionate master than you. You are the supreme and original personality of Godhead, and the drones are just trying to spread your glories by chanting every moment. I think some of them must be great sages, devotees of your lordship, and they are disguising themselves in the form of drones, because they are unable to give up your company, even for a moment. My dear brother, you are the supreme worshipable Godhead. Just see how the peacocks in great ecstasy are dancing before you. The deer, whose behavior is just like that of the gopis, are welcoming you with the same affection. And the cuckoos who are residing in this forest are receiving you with great joy, because they consider that your appearance is so auspicious in their home. Even though they are trees and animals, these residents of Vrindavan are glorifying you. They are prepared to welcome you to the best of their ability, as is the practice of great souls in receiving another great soul at home. As for the land, it is so pious and fortunate that the footprints of your lotus feet are marking its body. Sometimes when we are on Parikram nowadays, we think of the difference, that it was so beautiful and opulent then, and it seems to be so unlike that now. Radios, pollution, and so on. But we should not dwell on that. We should try to dwell on what's described here and know that it's not just something that existed in the past and is gone now, but this is still going on in Vrindavan, the eternal pastimes of Krishna. So with faith going down some levels in our consciousness below fault finding of others and bodily considerations, we should pray to Krishna to make us devotees, make us purified, so we can understand Vrindavan a little bit. Like Narottam Das Thakur says, when I'm free of sense gratification, and when I have a desire to read the books of the six Goswamis, when I can chant the holy name without offense, then I can know Vrindavan. So let's keep going. Let me stop again. Let's sound next time.
Plants are also so fortunate to touch your lotus feet. And by your touching the twigs with your hands, these small plants are also made glorious. As for the hills and the rivers, they too are now glorious because you are glancing at them. Above all, the damsels of Braja, the gopis, attracted by your beauty, are the most glorious because you embrace them with your strong arms. In this way, both Lord Krishna and Balaram began to enjoy the residence of Vrindavan to their full satisfaction, along with the calves and cows on the bank of the Yamuna. In some places, both Krishna and Balaram were accompanied by their friends. The boys were singing, imitating the humming sound of the drones, and accompanying Krishna and Balaram, who were garlanded with forest flowers. While walking, the boys sometimes imitated the quacking sound of the swans in the lakes, or when they saw the peacocks dancing, they imitated them before Krishna. Krishna also moved his neck, imitating the dancing and making his friends laugh. The cows taken care of by Krishna had different names, and Krishna would call them with love. After hearing Krishna calling, the cows would immediately respond by mooing, and the boy would enjoy this exchange to their heart's content. They would all imitate the sound vibrations made by the different kinds of birds, especially the chakoras, peacocks, cuckoos, and bharadvajas. Sometimes, when they would see the weaker animals fleeing out of fear of the sounds of tigers and lions, the boys, along with Krishna and Balaram, would imitate the animals and run away with them. When they felt some fatigue, they would sit down, and Balaram would put his head on the lap of one of the boys just to take rest, and Krishna would immediately come and begin massaging the legs of Balaram. And sometimes he would take a palm fan and fan the body of Balaram, causing a pleasing breeze to relieve him of his fatigue. Other boys would sometimes dance or sing while Balaram took rest, and sometimes they would wrestle among themselves or jump. When the boys were thus engaged, Krishna would immediately join them, and catching their hands, he would enjoy their company and laugh and praise their activities. When Krishna would feel tired and fatigued, he would sometimes take shelter of the root of a big tree or the lap of a cowherd boy and lie down. When he would lie down with a boy or a root as his pillow, some of the boys would come and massage his legs,
or some would fan his body with a fan made from leaves. Some of the more talented boys would sing in very sweet voices to please him. Thus, very soon, his fatigue would go away. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, whose legs are tended by the Goddess of Fortune, shared himself with the cowherd boys as one of them. Expanding his internal potency to appear exactly like a village boy. But despite his appearing just like a village boy, there were occasions when he proved himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sometimes men pose themselves as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and cheat innocent people. But they can only cheat. They cannot exhibit the potency of God. Shall we go? When the gopi is attracted by the flute, Krishna was very pleased with the atmosphere of the forest, where flowers bloomed and bees and drones hummed very jubilantly. While the birds, trees, and branches were all looking very happy, Krishna, tending the cows, accompanied by Sri Balaram and the cowherd boys, began to vibrate his transcendental flute. After hearing the vibration of the flute, the gopis in Vrindavan remembered him and began to talk among themselves about how nicely Krishna was playing his flute. When the gopis were describing the sweet vibration of Krishna's flute, they also remembered their pastimes with him. Thus their minds became disturbed, and they were unable to describe completely the beautiful vibrations. While discussing the transcendental vibration, they also remembered how Krishna dressed, decorated with a peacock feather on his head, just like a dancing actor, and with blue flowers pushed over his ear. His garment glowed yellow gold, and he was garlanded with a Vaijayanti necklace. Dressed in such an attractive way, Krishna filled up the holes of his flute with the nectar emanating from his lips. So they remembered him entering the forests of Vrindavan, which is always glorified by the footprints of Krishna and his companions. So as we're stopping to read on our walk, we should stop as much as possible in our activities and hear the undiluted pastimes of Krishna. It's expected that on the Parikram trail we're also thinking of Krishna and chanting Hare Krishna. But the mind is very strong and wants to think of so many different things here and there. So when we can stop and just hear from Krishna submissively, then you can notice the difference, or even if you don't notice the difference, as we were reading in Prabhupada's purport the other day, you become imperceptibly liberated. And then, if this is true, even that while walking on Parikram, you can improve your state of mind by stopping to hear about Krishna, then what to speak of when we're not here and we're taking care of our affairs somewhere else in the world, those of us who don't live in Vrindavan. We should stop. See how easy it is to stop here. It's like the cars, they have a pit stop where they just pull right over to make some repair on the race car and then immediately get back. So it's very easy to stop and go as long as you have a book. So similarly, you should have a Krishna book or one of these Prabhupada's books and be thinking, when can I stop again? And what passage shall I hear again? I want to hear more about Krishna. Always reading, always hearing about Krishna. Will improve our consciousness no matter what we're doing. And it's not just a matter of philosophy, of understanding things by reason and logic, but just to increase your desire to hear more about Krishna and to be eager to be part of his pastimes, at least by hearing. It doesn't require any logical argument, because actually it's beyond logic. It's achintya. But the more you hear, the more you like it, and the more you become convinced, and the more you want to hear. Krishna was very expert in playing the flute, and the gopis were captivated by the sound vibration, which was attractive not only to them, but to all living creatures who heard it. One of the gopis told her friends, "The highest perfection of the eyes is to see Krishna and Balaram entering the forest and playing their flutes and tending the cows with their friends." I said, in a sense, it's beyond philosophy, but there's a transcendental philosophy, and when we read Krishna book, from time to time, Prabhupada informs us of the transcendental position of the pastimes and the residents of Vrindavan, like this paragraph. "Persons who are constantly engaged in the transcendental meditation of seeing Krishna internally and externally by thinking of him playing the flute, entering the Vrindavan forest, and tending the cows with the cowherd boys, have really attained the perfection of samadhi." Samadhi, trance, means absorption of all the activities of the senses in a particular object. And the gopis indicate that the pastimes of Krishna are the perfection of all meditation and samadhi. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that anyone who is always absorbed in the thought of Krishna is the topmost of all yogis. So now we walk again. We can try to remember what we just read about the gopis talking about Krishna's flute, what Prabhupada said about samadhi, maybe what I said, and then look forward. Now, when are we going to stop again and hear again? Okay.
Another gopi expressed her opinion that Krishna and Balaram, while tending the cows, appeared just like actors going to play on a dramatic stage. Krishna was dressed in glowing garments of yellow, Balaram in blue, and they held new twigs of mango tree, peacock feathers, and bunches of flowers in their hands. Dressed with garlands of lotus flowers, they were sometimes singing very sweetly among their friends. One gopi told her friend, "How is it Krishna and Balaram are looking so beautiful?" Another gopi said, "My dear friends, we cannot even think of his bamboo flute. What sort of pious activities did it execute, so that it is now enjoying the nectar of the lips of Krishna?" Krishna sometimes kisses the gopis, therefore the transcendental nectar of his lips is available only to them, and his lips are considered their property. Therefore the gopis asked, "How is it possible that the flute, which is nothing but a bamboo rod, is always engaged in enjoying the nectar from Krishna's lips?" "Because the flute is engaged in the service of the Supreme Lord, the mother and the father of the flute must be happy. The lakes and the rivers are considered to be the mothers of the trees, because the trees live simply by drinking water. So the waters of the lakes and rivers of Vrindavan were full of happy lotus flowers, because the waters were thinking, 'How is it that our son, the bamboo rod, is enjoying the nectar of Krishna's lips?' The bamboo trees standing by the banks of the rivers and the lakes were also happy to see their descendant so engaged in the service of the Lord, just as a person's who are advanced in knowledge take pleasure to see their descendants engage in the service of the Lord. The trees were overwhelmed with joy and were incessantly yielding honey, which flowed from the beehives hanging on the branches." Many times the gopis express their feelings about the flute of Krishna. And sometimes it sounds like they're envious of the flute, and it may sound like their desire to get the nectar from Krishna's lips may sound like sense gratification, but it's not like that. These are our material impositions on the pastimes. The gopis either are eternally liberated souls, or persons who became perfect by sadhana, siddha process after many lifetimes, like different groups of sages in the forest with Rama, or the Vedas personified. So after so many austerities, they understood that the highest happiness is to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they wanted to do this being attracted to the conjugal relationship with Krishna, because that's his all-attractive form and his all-attractive rasa. So in that state of consciousness, there's no selfishness of wanting to do something apart from Krishna, which is illusion. But the real happiness is to serve Krishna, as in Prabhupada's basic example. The hand is meant to serve the body. It can't eat food separately. When the hand feeds, then the whole body is nourished, including the hand. So in these pastimes also, with Krishna and the gopis, the same principle is there, that they're not trying to enjoy separately or trying to enjoy from Krishna, but they're simply trying to give pleasure to Krishna. And so the gopis, they are the epitome of this, because in one sense, they don't get anything back. They don't even get to be the wives of Krishna. Krishna's wives, they get to enjoy the domestic life that Krishna's enjoying and they're enjoying. But the gopis are just apparently sometimes enjoyed by Krishna in his loose behavior. He enjoys with them and then he leaves them. So that, they don't get anything. Ashvishava Padaratam Panastama Madarshana Mamhatam Karotuva. They may not even get to see Krishna. But still, they love Krishna, and that's the best kind of love of Krishna. So we shouldn't think, when we hear the gopis saying, oh, why is the flute getting the lips of Krishna? We want that nectar. It's not some kind of competition for sense gratification, which Krishna is giving out. But they see that the flute pleases Krishna, and that makes him happy. So there's a kind of competition. Let's make Krishna happy. Let us do it. What are we for otherwise? What is life for? But to try to serve Krishna in some way, to please. And in our immediate situation as devotees also, we should always be thinking how to please Krishna, how to please the spiritual master, how to contribute to the Krishna consciousness movement in some way, enhance the quality of this movement for the pleasure of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and then we'll be happy ourselves. And that's how we should also see any present activity that's going on that's pleasing Krishna. As the gopis were actually happy to see the flute so much pleasing to Krishna and intimate with him, we should be happy when we see devotees who are doing something nice, who are making some advancement, and it should inspire us to think, well, if that devotee can do that, and that's very nice, I should try to do something also to improve my Krishna consciousness and contribute to the Krishna consciousness movement. Sometimes the gopis spoke thus to their friends about Krishna. Dear friends, our Vrindavan is proclaiming the glories of this entire earth because this planet is glorified by the lotus footprints of the son of Devaki. Besides that, when Govinda plays his flute, the peacocks immediately become mad. When all the animals and trees and plants, either on the top of Govardhan Hill or in the valley, see the dancing of the peacock, they all stand still and listen to the transcendental sound of the flute with great attention. We think that this boon is not possible or available on any other planet. Although the gopis were village cowherd women and girls, they had knowledge of Krishna. Similarly, one can learn the highest truths by hearing the Vedas from authoritative sources. This planet, Earth planet, seems like a very mundane place full of so much politics and wars as recorded in history since the beginning of historical time. But actually, the planet is spiritualized because Krishna came here. Out of the whole universe, all the planets, he came here. And this is where he came. This is his estate. Prabhupada compares it to a governor or president. He has his permanent headquarters, like the United States, the White House. And in the United States, when the president, he takes a vacation, there's this place called Camp David. And he has other places. So when he's not there, they keep that place waiting for him. He may come any weekend. So similarly, Krishna, his place is Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world. But when he comes to the material world, this is his escape. He actually came here, he walked this earth that we're walking, and he lived here where the same peacocks are, and so on. That's why this gesture of that Ranchar Prabhu and others are trying to revive the external appearance of Vrindavan, not let it be polluted, to plant trees here and everything. It's very nice, because Prabhupada, he also complained that this estate is being neglected. So if the president, when he decides, now I want to go to my estate, if he goes there and the whole place is decrepit and nobody's thinking of him, and he'll be very angry. So Krishna when he gets displeased, then the place gets worse and worse. It turns into a desert, and the whole country can turn into a desert, the whole planet. So Krishna's estate should be kept nicely. And that mainly means that those who live here and who visit here should behave as in the footsteps of the Goswamis, not as sense enjoyers. Let's keep moving.
You have to stay awake better.
Prabhupada said, oh, that's nice. He said, there's even a kind of sannyasi, Prabhupada, but he'll never stand still, he'll always move. And if you want to talk with him, you have to move and talk with him. We're getting a little close to freedom. But then she didn't say anything. None of the gopis said, well, just see. She doesn't appear to be affected by this statement that you are her husband. If you were really her husband, she would have been very embarrassed to have said this. So actually, this is just a lie that you're married to Brinda. And actually, the forest belongs to Radharani. Who has a special role in Radha Krishna pastimes of decorating all the trees and making arrangements. It's like in the theater, somebody is the design of the set. So she makes everything blossoming and all the trees beautiful for their pastimes. I mean, they're all the gopis are expansions of Radharani, but there's a Brinda. It's like there's a Brinda deity, the one in Kamyavan, and one in that Rupa Sanatan Mandir in Vrindavan.
Sometimes I hear she's a plant, Brinda Devi Tulsi, and then I've also heard what you just said.
Many
expansions. When you go to Rupa Dham Parikram, you're even more transparent than getting all the female personalities.